Hello, and welcome to Hope Church. We're a local church with chill style, real faith, and no perfect people allowed. Thanks for checking out our podcast. This is a message from our Soquel location in the Santa Cruz, California area. We hope this message is encouraging. If you live near either of our locations, we'd love to have you join us for one of our many Sunday services.
Hey, you guys. Today, we're going to be continuing our series, Keep Hope Alive, where we're looking at stories in the Bible of hopeless situations where God shows up and does something amazing. So today we're going to be reading from Mark chapter 5. And I would love it if you followed along at home. So if you've got a Bible or if you have a phone with the Bible app, go ahead and grab that, head to Mark chapter 5. And while you're doing that, I'm just going to give you a little bit of background context for the scripture that we're about to read. So at this point in Jesus's life, he is in the thick of his ministry. He's got his 12 disciples, and he's going around, and he's teaching primarily about the kingdom of God, which is a reordering of values. He's showing people a new and better way to live, where he's showing people who they are and how they should relate to others and how they should relate to God. So he's teaching. He's also demonstrating his power by performing these amazing miracles. He is healing people of their physical afflictions. He's delivering people from dark spiritual forces. And he's just blowing people's minds with the way that he's defying the laws of nature. So he's teaching, he's performing miracles, and all along the way, he's inviting people to follow him, to join him in this new way of thinking, this new way of living, and this new way of being. Because of his profound teachings and because of the miracles that he was performing, word was spreading like far and wide of Jesus. He had a ton of momentum. He had a bunch of people who were starting to follow him. There was even more people who were curious about him, who had heard of him, and were trying to get closer to see who is this Jesus. But there was also some people who just outright rejected him. And typically these people, they came from a group of religious leaders who were threatened by his teachings, his authority, and just the fact that people were following him. So that's the background. And in this story, we're going to be hearing two different stories of two different people and how both of them are in this kind of impossible, hopeless situation, and they're desperately seeking out Jesus. The first is a man, his name is Jairus, and he is a religious leader. So he's got power and status. The second is a woman, and we don't even know her name, but we do know that she is poor and that she has an incurable physical condition. We're going to be reading from the Gospel of Mark, but these two stories also show up in the Gospel of Matthew and the Gospel of Luke. And what's really cool is that in all three accounts of these two stories, the authors do a really beautiful and intentional job of weaving them together. So let's get started. Mark chapter 5, we're going to start in verse 21. When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. Okay, so let's stop right there. Jairus is a synagogue leader. He's part of the group of religious leaders that, you know, like people, his peers probably did not like Jesus. They saw themselves as socially superior to Jesus and the people who he was leading. So for someone of his status and his occupation to come to Jesus and humble himself and like throw himself at Jesus's feet, like get on his knees, like that is a big deal. Verse 23, he pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed around him. So remember, Jesus is a really big deal at this time. To help you visualize the kind of crowd that he's encountering, I will disclose a personal confession that I recently watched a documentary with the Jonas Brothers, which I liked more than I thought I would. But there is this, there's these scenes where you'd have the Jonas Brothers and you'd have thousands of fans. And as they're trying to get from one place to the other, like from the car to the concert venue, they were just being smashed by all these people who were like shouting at them and trying to touch them. And all that to say, like, this is likely what it was like for Jesus, with everyone trying to reach him. Continuing in verse 25. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. So a few things about this. Firstly, it's pretty much agreed upon that the type of bleeding she had was menstrual, which means that she was basically on her period 24/7, which is terrible. And I think I speak for all women when I say 1 week out of the month is enough. But basically that means that her bleeding wasn't just a physical condition, but it was a social problem as well. Because according to the law, she was ritually unclean, meaning that she technically was not supposed to be in public, and that if she touched someone, they would be considered unclean for the rest of the day too. So the boldness, like the audacity that she had to go out in public when there's this huge crowd and push her way to Jesus to touch his cloak, like that is incredible. As was her faith. It says she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. Verse 29, immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once, Jesus realized that the power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, who touched my clothes? Like, if I was this woman, I would be terrified. verse 31. You see the people crowding against you, his disciples answered, and yet you can ask, who touched me? Remember, big packed crowd, like Jonas Brothers. But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet and, trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. And I love how he responds with such grace. He said to her, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering. While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. Your daughter is dead, they said. Why bother the teacher anymore? Like, put yourself in Jairus' shoes right now. Jesus was on his way to give him the miracle that he so desperately sought. And while they're on their way to go heal his daughter, Jesus is interrupted. And instead, this woman gets her miracle. And in the time that it takes for Jesus to stop and help this woman, he gets word that it's too late, that his daughter's dead. Like, if that was you, if that was your daughter, like, I can't imagine what he would feel like. And I think that speaks to a lot of us. It's easy to get discouraged when you see people around you receiving their miracle and you're still waiting for yours. You see God doing amazing things for other people, and you're seeing him show up in all these really cool ways, and then you look at your hopeless circumstances and you think, well, where is God in this? Like, has he forgotten about me? Verse 36. Overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, don't be afraid, just believe. He did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion, with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep. But they laughed at him. Like, can we agree that Jesus is kind of provocative? I mean, like, there's things that he says and that he does that really force you to make up your mind of what you believe about Jesus. Like, is this guy a lunatic or is he the real deal? Like, is he who he says he is? Like, who shows up at a child's wake where family and friends are mourning the loss of their loved one and says to them, "What are you guys crying about? She's just sleeping." Well, apparently Jesus, but only because he has the authority to back it up. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately, the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. At this, they were completely astonished. He gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this and told them to give her something to eat. That is an amazing story of Jesus's restorative power. When he healed the woman from her bleeding condition, not only did he restore to her health, but he also restores her to right standing in her community. Before she was outcast, he restores her dignity and he restores her relationships. And with Jairus' daughter, when Jesus brought her back to life, not only did he restore her life, but he restored their family. So what can we glean from these two stories to help us in our lives? Well, I have two main points for you, and it's all about restoration. The first point is that we see restoration when we recognize that Jesus is what we need. How many times do we search and search and search and still come up short? Sometimes even the best that the world has to offer isn't enough. And that's what this woman with the bleeding condition experienced. She turned to doctors, she spent all of her money, and it says, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. But the cool thing is that even though she had never met Jesus, and even though Jairus had never met Jesus, they had heard of Jesus and what he was doing, and they made the choice to believe that he had the power to change their situation. In both of the stories, Jesus kind of encourages both of them about faith. To the woman, he says, "Your faith has healed you." And to Jairus, he said, "Don't be afraid, just believe." And now, it's because that they believed the truth about Jesus that they were able to experience that restorative power. So the first point is that we see restoration when we recognize that Jesus is what we need. And the second point I have for you is that we see restoration when we bring ourselves to the feet of Jesus. Now in this story, you have this really cool juxtaposition of two people coming from very different places. So on one hand, you have Jairus. He's the religious official. He's got power. He's got influence. He's the one whose peers likely hated Jesus and everything he stood for. So he had to push past his own pride, his status, and what his peers would think of him in order to humble himself before Jesus. And then on the other hand, you have this woman who in many ways had already been humbled. Because of her gender, because women at the time had less social standing than men. We know that she was poor because she used all of her money on doctors. And then because of her condition, she was ritually unclean, which means she had pretty much no social status and she was outcasted by society. So she had to muster up the courage to push past what people believed about her and what she believed about herself in order to get to Jesus. So you have these two people who need to bring themselves to the feet of Jesus and look up. The only difference is that he's got to get on his knees and she's already there. I think it's interesting that in both of these stories, Jesus uses the term daughter or language like daughter. In speaking to the woman with bleeding and to the 12-year-old girl. It's not as weird with the girl because she's young, and so the term of endearment, like, that seems not as weird. But the woman, she was probably about Jesus' age, so it's peculiar that he uses that language. But I think what he's doing there is he is modeling how we ought to relate to him. And that is that we are God's children. And it takes a lot of courage and humility to approach God like that as a child. Like Jairus, I think many of us have to overcome our pride or who we believe we are in approaching Jesus as that authority, as that father figure. And when we do that, we recognize that there are implications and obligations for our behavior and thinking. And that takes humility. On the other end, some of us are like that woman, and we have to overcome our fear of approaching God. Maybe that's you. Maybe you don't feel worthy because of what you've done or what people have done to you or said to you. Like I have friends who've distanced themselves from God, and or they don't go to church because they feel like there isn't a place for them there. They think that that they would have to fake it to belong. That a relationship with Jesus is reserved for those who know all the right things and do all the right things. But like, can I tell you, that is a load of BS. And if that's where you find yourself, I want to encourage you, be like that woman who pushes past all that to get to Jesus, to be vulnerable and to allow Jesus to confront the brokenness in our lives is not easy. But the most beautiful things happen when we find the humility and the courage to do that. That is when we experience Jesus' restorative power. Jesus is all about restoration. He wants to restore our minds. He wants to restore our hearts, our bodies, our ways of doing and being. He wants to restore our relationships. Like, these stories model to us what Jesus wants to do in our lives. And not only that, but what he wants to accomplish through us, what we can do for others. Not that we have the power to fix anybody, but as Jesus followers and as people who are in that process of allowing him to restore us, we can point people to the one who does have the power, the healing power. I think that many people view Christianity as something that we do. But in reality, it's redefining who we are. That's actually what the name Christian, it means little Christ. And that's because we bear his image and we bear his name in our very being. Like, I know that I'm not perfect. I fall short all the time. And I'll be the first one to tell you that I'm broken, but I know who my healer is. And I will bear his name and his image wherever I go. Because that's who I am. That's who he's made me to be. I've had the honor of sharing Jesus here in this community for the past 8 years. Being a leader at Hope and Skate Church and Flow has been one of the greatest honors I've had. You guys have impacted my life. And I'm so grateful for the relationships that I have with you guys. And now it's time for my next adventure. This is my last Sunday here before I head up to Portland to help plant a new church. And I've told some of you guys this story, but before I made my announcement to Hope, to all the adults, the big church, about my plans to move, it was really important for me to tell my students first. And the kids at Skate Church were the first ones to know. They're, you know, age first through, or grades first through fifth, so they're young kids. And I was able to share with them where I was going and why I was going. And it was really special because one by one, like totally unprompted, they started to raise their hand and they told me that, you know, they were sad to see me go, they were sad that I was leaving, but they were happy for the kids in Portland who I would be sharing Jesus with. And they started praying for me, and they started praying for the families in Portland that I haven't even met yet. And I was so encouraged because these kids understood what it was all about. Pretty soon, I'll be bearing the name and the image of Jesus in a new place. And it's not just because I'm going to be working in ministry. It's not because I'm going to help plant a church or I'm going to be volunteering with kids. It's because I'm who I am. Like, God has changed me. So whether I'm planting a church or I'm learning how to build a house or meeting new friends in a new neighborhood, like, I'm going to bear the name and the image of Jesus. Like, we all get to do that. Whether it's in Portland, Santa Cruz, wherever you're at, like, you have that beautiful honor of being restored by your Creator and pointing people to the loving arms of Jesus. Like, how beautiful is that?
We hope this message encouraged you to take the next steps in your relationship with God. The cool thing is that you don't have to do it alone. There are a lot of ways you can get connected to your hope. Not only do we want you to feel at home at Hope, we'd love to help you find a home. Please check out discoverhope.church and click connect, or just email us at info@discoverhope.church. Lastly, we give everything we can away for free and rely 100% on volunteers and donations to support this ministry. If you'd like to give to the mission of Hope Church, you can select the give option on our website or text any amount to 831-800-2060. Thanks again for tuning in.